is, yes, I did sleep in this sport coat. And it was time to get out of Wyoming and Cheyenne. The other day it was so cold I saw a lawyer going down the street with his hands in his own pockets. I did want you to know that 53 years I've been living with this classy lady. A lot of people voted for her. They wouldn't vote for me, but 53 years, married all that time, of course. You have to say that in politics. Good to have her. Let me just now, I see there's a clock here. This must have some meaning. What time is it? Because you get out of here at 1:30, right? What time is it? Because this clock, it says 1:08. They're trying to drive me insane. What? 1 o'clock. Well, we want 15 minutes of questions, so I'm really going to rattle here. However, I have a quick Wyoming story for you. This couple hit the sack. 3 in the morning, the phone rings. Guy answers, says, "How the hell do I know? That's 2,000 miles from here." Hangs up. His wife said, "Who was it?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "Some nut called and asked if the coast was clear." This is a terrible story. Anyway, we're going to get to some serious business here. That time at Harvard, we were there as the token Republicans at Harvard, and I couldn't have got into Harvard if I'd picked the locks. I never graduated cum laude. I graduated thank the laude. Just a quick note about society and retirement. I see many retired here, but obviously, if you have really been in retirement, you've been through what's called staff deprivation. And about a year after we'd retired, Ann said, "Alan, your staff is gone. You have no staff. They are not here. And I am not one of your staff." But there's biblical precedence for that. It says in the good book, Jacob died leaning on his staff. Now, we're going to get to some... Yeah, you'll think about that when you get home. Anyway, I'm going to churn around in here. The Iraq study group was a fascinating thing. There were 10 of us, 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats. We met for 6 months. We agreed that if we couldn't come out with a unanimous decision, that we would disband. And that was pretty tough because we'd seen too many commissions where they file a minority report and 2 or 3 guys cover their fanny and the rest of them go off the cliff. So we didn't want to do that. And, of course, this situation, this terrible conundrum of Iraq and Afghanistan is so confounding to us because it's 24/7. And so anyway, we were appointed by the Congress, in essence, and the members of that group, you know, Sandra Day O'Connor, we had Lee Hamilton and Jim Baker, Vernon Jordan, Bill Perry, Chuck Robb, and Leon Panetta, and then the Republicans were Bob Gates, and then he went on into the administration as Secretary of Defense, and then Larry Eagleburger came in. And then Sandra Day O'Connor, Ed Meese, and myself. And we presented that to the president in December. We knew that he wouldn't be thrilled by some of it, 79 recommendations. We went through every word of it together for days before we presented it. And I remember I made a change in wording in one of the paragraphs, and Sandra Day said, "Don't you realize you're using a split infinitive?" I said, "I don't even know what a split infinitive is." And Sandra, for the God's sake, let me tell you, she is something. I would not want to be trying cases in the Supreme Court. She's a dazzler. She's a wonderful person. I'm going to dump that now. We're going to get, because these young people are here, I want to talk about to them. But what looked like progress months ago with the Palestinian-Israeli issue now takes on a more sinister tone. Democracy is not always a sweet potion. Sometimes it takes on the taste of the wormwood and the gall. And to see Hamas winning the Palestinian elections was a tough one for the world to calibrate. And here they are, a political party who promised the people of Palestine heat, light, water, food, and fighting corruption. Now, that'll get you elected in a lot of democracies, that platform. So there they are. But many forgot their other political purpose, which was the destruction of Israel. And the world forgets another thing about Hamas. They're one of the very few political parties with an army. Think if the Republicans and Democrats had an army and how that could be so gratuitous and cheerful. All right, we're going to throw that out. The issue of terrorism and the issue of Iraq, remember the whole purpose of terrorism is to bring down government. It worked in Spain. The explosions changed the whole shift of the political process in Spain. Here you have a country that's working on a constitution. They don't know what it is. One of the witnesses to us said, we said, what was it like when we came? Well, they said, it's like a person in a coma for 30 years. And they wake up and they say, what's the first thing you want? And just as they're about to say food and water, they say, oh, we're going to give you voting and democracy. They have no idea what that is. We found that the militia was the crookedest bunch of cats that you could ever imagine. They're abusive. They're on the take. They subsidize gasoline so they can then black market it. They play with the oil. The only stable thing we found in Iraq was the Iraqi army. Malaki is not stable. Nothing else is stable. And as I say, the militia are monstrous. But the Iraqi army is finally doing what an army should do. They salute the common flag. And they train. They train in Jordan and Israel and Egypt. So there's progress. And one of our recommendations was that we step away in April of 2008. Not step away from the country, but go from a role of combat to support. And that was a suggestion of ours. But the conflict now is a complete cutoff. Forget the support. And, of course, there's veto out there in the weeds with the president. But the people are very clear as to their disgust in politics and politicians, especially young people. So unless you have a question in the period on Iraq, I'm going to move on. But it's interesting how people say, I wish people could get together in a bipartisan way and deal with the tough issues of the day. So guess what? You know, like immigration, Social Security, the entitlements, you know, health care, nuclear high-level waste, Iraq. So our group did this in a bipartisan way, and we've been whacked on from the right as a surrender group, and we've been whacked on from the left that we were just a bunch of George First's big buddies trying to save Junior. Now, it is then my personal opinion that as long as bipartisanship agrees with your viewpoint, that's fine. If it doesn't, to hell with it. Just thought I'd throw that in. I know it's a sick idea. Anyway, I'm going to throw that away and get rid of that. We recommend a new diplomatic offensive, which is talking with Iran and Syria. People say, talk to Iran and Syria, you dumb chick. You know. Well, we've heard all that, too. But let me tell you something about life and marriage and relationships. Nothing good ever happens when you give somebody the ice treatment. It destroys marriage. It destroys all relationships. I'm not talking to you. Well, guess what? They're talking now. Okay, Iran hates our guts. We hate Iran's guts. First, we start with that. That's important. Make it as intense as you can. And then figure, Okay, they hate one thing worse, and that is Iraq in flames. Their Shia joining with their Shia, and then the Sunnis joining up with the Arabs. Let me tell you, they fear that. They hate that a lot more than the other. And don't talk with North Korea, because they'll go tell their people that the great Satan came crawling on his knees, barfing at their shoes, and call them all a bunch of wimps. Well, that's what they do today. There's nothing new about what they would say about the United States. So now we're talking to North Korea. And it's interesting. People seem to forget that for 40 years, the Soviet Union said that they would destroy us. And we had an embassy in their country all 40 years. And we had consulates in their country, and they in ours, for 40 years. And what happened? It was resolved. So it's really fascinating to me, as if the span, of course, the span of listening public today is whether this body will compose or Britney Spears will grow hair again. And these are critical things, I realize, but nevertheless, now we're going to throw that away and get that, and get that. I want to talk about civility. They say, what happened to civility in government? What's wrong with you people up there? I said, I don't know, but I tell you, let's not worry about the feds first. Let's check the city council chamber in your hometown. Check the county commissioner's meeting, the school board meeting, the Little League ballpark, the hockey team downtown, or the cheerleader's mother who shot the other cheerleader's mother. I mean, this stuff comes from the bottom up. And don't forget, about 15% of the people in every organization you know are screwballs, lightweights, and boobs, and you wouldn't want those people underrepresented in Congress. Now, then as far as those of us who deal in this fascinating alchemy of politics, and young people say, politics and partisanship is stupid, it's silly, it's ugly, childish, negative, irritating, even exhausting. And I just say to them, well, then move to a country where they don't have any politics or any partisanship and write me a letter in 6 months and tell me what kind of fun you're having. Don't be silly. You better get in it, and you young people have to get in it, because, now, don't throw anything, please. Put your rolls down. In the year 2010, 60% of the domestic budget of the United States will be going to people over 60, regardless of their net worth or their income. And when you're 60, you'll be picking grit with the chickens. Because every time we try to do something, here comes the AARP. The AARP, as we say, ARP is what way we say it. They are 38 million Americans bound together by a common love of airline discounts. And automobile discounts and RV discounts, I'm telling you, they are greedy. Now, let me tell you this. I can see you're passing. You're not passing out, but you're passing. Listen to this, how hard it is to do. Bipartisan group, Chafee, Bro, Nancy Kassbaum, Bradley, we said, look, we're going to say that anybody who earns over 60 grand a year in retirement, other than their pension and their Social Security and assets that they had, solid, going to have to pay the whole premium for Part B. Part B is voluntary. It's physician reimbursements, about $200 a month. Right now, the beneficiary pays 25% of that premium. And we tried to change that. The mailroom broke down from Sun City. They had a hernia dragging in the mail. USOB, you rotten rat fink. And so guess what? And it's funny, but it's not very funny. The richest people in America are paying 25% of that premium, which is about $200 a month, and the people in this kitchen are paying the other 75%, and we can't change that. Try that when you're thinking about compassion and, you know, slopping Chardonnay on your shoes and thinking of that. think about what the reality of that is. I hate to be harsh, but this is nuts. This is nuts. Met a guy the other day who bought the whole complex. It just had heart surgery. It cost $150,000. I only had to pay $3,000. I thought, yeah, you're paying it. You're paying it. So without affluence testing on those benefits, it'll never happen. Don't throw anything. I'm going to get the hell out of that. But I think we all have to do better. And this harping, as I say, on civility, you have to go back. And then the entertainment industry has debased America. That was Moynihan's statement. Pat Moynihan, Democrat of New York, a very close friend. You have the right-wing cuckoos and the left-wing cuckoos. The soaps in the afternoon consist of the horniest people on the planet. Sitcoms are a bunch of smart-ass parents and smart-ass kids. Now, remember, that's what it is. Just look. The parents are portrayed as the dummies of the ages. The dialogue is about sarcasm and snide cracks and nasty statements, all delivered by a bunch of vacuous vapor heads on a soundtrack. Other than that, it's great stuff. And the movies, of course, are self-explanatory. The Anglo-Saxon word uttered by Dick Cheney can be heard 50 times in a PG movie. Well, I think I'll stop. I heard my wife clear her throat over there. But I think we all could do better. Let me just conclude. Any damn fool can be a critic. Any damn fool can be a critic. A critic is a product of creativity not his own. Doesn't do a lick of good to bitch and whine and howl and accuse and protest. I think we must raise our sights. Young people have to help us solve these problems. Get involved. I don't care what party you're in, get involved. It'll never be done by people whose only apparent mission in life is to grab a microphone, get everybody all worked up, and then you have to come along behind them like at the Frontier Days parade and police up. So let me give you the definition of politics, because this is all mine. It's very short. In politics, there are no right answers, only a continual flow of compromises among groups, resulting in a changing, cloudy and ambiguous series of public decisions where appetite and ambition compete openly with knowledge and wisdom. That's all there is. You can't change it. It's a strange work we do, but I think we need to work together, and I hope they'll begin to do that. The president has no choice. He can't go forward now in whatever way he was going, because he can't, because it's called politics, and it's called a Democrat Senate and a Democrat House. I think some things will happen. And then finally, watch out for the old political correctness. Political correctness is like wearing duct tape over your mouth, because if you really are a person filled with bias, hate, prejudice, and pretend you're not, that you're goody-goody two-shoes, it will come to the surface like a fissure through a volcano core. So why not get it out in the sunlight and not let it breed in the dark subterranean places in the heart and soul? Well, I'm going to stop. And Penny is going to ask me questions. Some of them are wretched. No, they're not all wretched, but anyway. Get out of town. I'm leaving town. I'm leaving town if any of you want to talk later.
We want to thank the senator. We have books on Naples and Marco Island, which I'll pass along to Ann, and Penny will handle the questions.
Great. Thank you, Wally.
All right. Senator Simpson, knowing of your interest in campaign finance reform, would you say a word or two about prospects for meaningful reform in this area for the next few years?
Well, we'll be torn to shreds on this one, so you want to watch us, because we're all ornery, but Warren Rudman and Bob Kerry and Bill Bradley are the national co-chairs of Americans for Campaign Reform. We are talking about federal funding of some of those races at the cost of $6 per taxpayer of the United States. You just laid out $200 billion for earmarks in the last session. Every one of those earmarks was a campaign contribution that didn't go through the appropriations process, couldn't make it through the appropriations process, so in the middle of the night, you just tack it on. $24 billion. Now, that's what's going on right now. Phil's seen it, I've seen it, anybody who knows Washington, this is the way it works. You can't get it passed during the regular course of business, and you put it on, and it's called an earmark. Every one of those earmarks is somebody maxing out. They maxed out in the primary, they max out in the general, they're wonderful people, they're not illegal, it's quite appropriate. And as the one guy said under oath, why did you give $300,000 to the presidential campaign? And he just laughed. He said, why the hell do you think I gave? I gave it for access. I mean, there's no other purpose for that, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's eating the system. So we will be eaten by rats on both sides, but we're gonna go. And a bill is in, bipartisan. It's in there with Specter. I know people think he's a commie, but he's not. He's a Republican. Arlen Specter is a Republican. He's listed as a Republican in the lexicon. And the other one is Durbin, and he's listed as a left-wing Lemonite. So maybe something can come. But at least we have the vehicle. We got the horse on the track. Now we got to get some silks on it and a jockey.
Do you see anyone emerging from either party to lead us out of the polarized political mess presently existing? And then there's the second one. Will Fred Thompson have a chance?
Well, Fred Thompson, start with the last. He'll have a chance. He's a very able man, a very wonderful senator, a steady kind of a guy. There are people who are sitting it out for now because the only reason the campaign has started now is because people have to go get money. There's no other purpose of starting this campaign except they all know there's only so many people to hit, and they don't want the other guy to get there before they get there, and so that's why this is on. Now, personally, I think they're going to raise the bucks, and I think the burn rate with media and so on, there won't be anything left for some of them in the fall of 2008. And then suddenly Newt Gingrich will step forward, or Fred Thompson, or Al Gore, and they'll say, well, these guys ran out of money, but here we are. There's something to that. But as far as leading this out of this, I could suggest all sorts of people, and you'd just shriek. You know, you'd say, not him, not her. So you're never going to get anywhere by recommending. But I would just say, you know, first it was Obama, and he was very attractive. Now there are problems there. He's not black enough, according to some in his own party. There's Hillary. Hillary, huh? Yeah, you know. They've got a bumper sticker. It says, Run, Hillary, Run. It's on the back of Democrat cars and the front of Republican cars. Where were we? Don't go back and tell your teachers any of this stuff. Especially you in psychology. Now, and then Giuliani's not pure enough. He talked about gun control, and in Wyoming, gun control is how steady you hold your rifle. We don't even talk about it. And then there's the gay lesbian issues, and then there's abortion. And so we spend all our time now on the heavy social issues of the day, while the other major issues of the day go totally unaddressed because of the tremendous impact of the right and the left on social issues, which if you're a Republican, which I am and they'll never throw me out, I thought we believed in individual responsibility and the precious right to be left alone. Anyway, I can't name anyone who will lead us out of the mess, but somebody threw the Fred Thompson thing, and he's a terrific, terrific guy. Yes, now, Penny, you have... Yes, I hoped you would.
Okay. This is a question from Hillary Bostick, one of our students from Barron Collier. Mm-hmm. And she said, I am honored to lead the Pledge of Allegiance each morning for the school. I sometimes hear comments regarding the words under God. I also read challenges regarding the term "In God We Trust" on the currency of the realm. According to some in the media, they object to this.
Well, I think that's going to always be the case. The Senate is opened every day by a prayer, as is the House. That's not going to change. The language on the money is not going to change. The courts threw out that case in the Ninth Circuit in California. But, that assault is... if you have another question, but let me just say in 1 minute, I think we forget our greatness. We are a country that is forgotten. We forget our role in the world, but yet not being arrogant. We forget we're the only nation on the face of the earth founded on a belief in God. Whether you like that or not is not the issue. That is a historical fact. Okay? We forget our strengths. We forget our blessings. We forget our roots in escaping religious tyranny. We forget we were the first country on earth to try to free the slaves. And I just think we should treat ourselves with a lighter hand and be tender with each other. And remember, too, we must be a pretty good country. Why in the hell would everybody on earth be trying to get here? So I think we should be proud of our heritage and our generosity and our hospitality and our diversity. And as the civil wars tear at the guts and hearts of every other country on earth, let's just remember we had one too. It was called Brother Against Brother. And in 5 days of that struggle across five Aprils, more died in all of the lengthy horror of Vietnam in 5 days of the Civil War. 650,000 people died in that war. World War II was 430,000. So I think we should be a bit slow to judge others, swift to defend the weak, and steady in our resolve to combat evil, and there's plenty of that in the world, and be ready at all times and places to speak well of a pretty fine experiment, this country, America. Now, do you have a question? Do you have another one of your extraordinary questions? Is this your writing? It is.
No, it isn't. Okay. Relative to what you just heard.
From a relative?
No. Do you believe that bringing democracy to the Middle East will solve most or some of their problems? And if not, what do you believe will be the U.S.'s future with the Middle East? And then somebody else related to the Iraq Study Group, too, said, wouldn't it have been better if you had stayed in business and continued to advocate your recommendations?
Mm-hmm. Let me keep those. I don't know about democracy in the Middle East. I certainly question it in Iraq. But certainly you have a renewed discussion going on with Palestine, the Palestinian, and Israel. Remember why our group thought we should talk to Syria. We thought Syria could talk to Hamas. I know it's a sick idea. I know. Don't throw anything. We thought Syria could talk to Hamas, at least the group that would allow Israel to exist. That's the only reason we suggested that, and now they are talking. They saved us. They bombed that embassy, and they went right in and guarded it in Syria. But I can only tell you this: if we pushed all our resources to resolving the Palestinian-Israeli issue, it would solve half the serious problems in that part of the world. And we can't do it very well, because then we get into flash words like anti-Semitism. See, everything I dealt with, you either passed or killed with a deft blend of emotion, fear, guilt, or racism. This is how you pass or kill legislation: emotion, fear, guilt, or racism. On immigration, anyone speaking with the clarity that we all know you'd have to have in immigration reform will be called a bigot and a racist and a xenophobe. It's the way it works. Anyone talking about population control of the earth, which is pretty serious business, I think, well, then we'll be talking about abortion and religion and ethnicity. Who wants to get into that? So you just sit it out by lighting the fire of emotion, fear, guilt, or racism. But I can tell you, we knew that if that resolution could begin, that some of the huge problems in that part of the world would fall into line. The reason we just got out of business is that we knew, well, first of all, we never put out our report before the election. We knew that would be a disaster. We were ready, but we didn't. So we put it out in December. People read it, went to the top of the New York Times list, stayed there for some time. But there was no, we quit because we couldn't go around the country testifying. They wanted us to come to Congress, and we'd send Hamilton and Baker. They do the testifying. And the rest of us are involved in other things. All of us on the commission are busy with other things for what we think are the good of the country. I'm on the Presidential Debate Commission. I'm on the group called The Common Good, which is about tort reform with former Attorney General Griffin Bell. Get hell for that. You're getting marvelous there. Oh, my. And so, enough. But we just didn't want to be on call, and anyone can read the report. But we do contact people. Congress people call us and ask us our thoughts, and we do that whenever we're requested, and we're kind of on call. Yes.
You'll love this one. Do you still believe the AARP creates trouble for Congress? And if so, how?
Let me tell you, this group, the AARP, you need to write and ask for their internal finances. You will get a letter, a very wretched canned letter, almost written in Egyptian, that says that the Andrus Foundation litigation has been sealed, was sealed years ago. They tried to find out how the hell they took $10 a person for 38 million people and didn't do more with it and still charge you $8 if you go to a driver's license seminar. So I'll tell you what they do. They say they're not a lobby. They are the toughest cookies you have ever met, because I had a hearing on them. Oh, they said, well, Senator, we just don't understand why you'd want to have a hearing. I said, I'd just like to find out how much money you make and how many people are on your payroll making over $150,000 a year. At that time, there were 120 on their payroll making over $125,000 a year. And all they do is, well, they bring in someone in rags, and they say, this is my sister. And she's a notch baby. I said, the next notch baby I have, I'm going to put a notch in their head. Because the notch babies appeared in 1922, I think, or 26. We had no choice. They were getting back 66% of the replacement rate, and the replacement rate was 41, and you had to draw the line. And we did. And then Ann Landers got a hold of us. She says the worst myth she ever got into. And so here's the sister, a year older, in rhinestone and glorious, and the other one in rags, and said, it's a notch baby. She can't eat. She's in a garbage can. That's not funny. But let me tell you, the AARP, in my mind, are irresponsible. Someone said, but look what they did with the prescription drug bill. I said, why wouldn't they? They're the largest pharmacy in the world. And you can walk into their pharmacy in Washington as a 15-year-old and get tetracycline for your zits. And yet, there they are, supposedly serving seniors who are not wealthy. Let me tell you. All I can tell you, I had a mole in their organization, and I had a poll. I asked, how many people know what you stand for? Their legislative thing there will give you a hernia carrying it. It has every demand you can make on a government in their regular ritual. And they said, well, about 80% of our people know what we stand for. I said, well, I have a download from your office this morning, a poll showing only 17% have any idea what you stand for. They're interested only in the marketing of the stuff you're peddling. They're interested in the insurance, they're interested in the wheelchairs, they're interested in the rolling wheels, they're interested in this and this and the Scudder and the Stevens, and that's all they know about AARP. They have no idea that you stand for not touching Social Security at all, except to say, we know that Congress will resolve it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't take anything away from this at all, there's only one way to solve the problems in Social Security, either raise the payroll tax or reduce the benefits, and the rest of it is crap. Forget it. That's pretty tough language, but there is no other way. Forget private accounts, just leave it out. But unless you either increase the payroll tax or reduce the benefits, like the Moynihan-Baker Commission in 83, where they all covered each other and dived off a cliff and it worked. Nothing will work again on that. What time is it? 3:15? No.
You can do either one.
Yeah.
Which one?
Well, I'll just gobble those up here. Ah, here.
Okay.
God, I'll read it. Won't take me.
What is your view on our relations with Cuba? Please elaborate. And another quick one, which is I sense Condi Rice is changing the State Department desire to negotiate. Am I right?
I think that Condi Rice is changing the State Department desire to negotiate because the American people have seen that whatever it is not working. The saddest part for me personally is to see what's happened to my friend of 45 years. We served together for 10 years, Dick Cheney. They have demonized him. They've marginalized him. This president will not remain marginalized. He will move because he has no choice but to move. And he's moving. He's moving to negotiation with or talking to North Korea. And Condi Rice is doing it. She's got her own staff. Cheney's foreign policy staff has been reduced in numbers and in influence seriously. And I talk to Dick often. We don't talk about the issues of the day. They're firing mortar shells into his bed at night from every source. But nevertheless, she is doing things and she is changing the image of the State Department and doing it in her own way with her own staff. There's a big article in Time on that recently. Cuba. Now, don't throw anything, please. I have no idea why we don't open relations with Cuba. None. Now, I know that someone will pick up a roll or a knife on that. But in my mind, again, the best thing you can do with neighbors or enemies is talk to them and get them involved in economics. That's why China is huge, but man oh man, do Americans love China. Not all of it. They know slave labor, they've heard that, but they love money. And the Chinese love money, and you really don't kill too many people who you're trading with. You don't want to get rid of a customer. Now, I know that sounds sarcastic or crude, but let me tell you, China is on fire, and we don't even know where that's going. But Cuba, I can't imagine what we could have done if just by opening relations. I favored it all the time I was in Senate. The Elian Gonzalez thing, if that young man had been German or Dutch, that would have been over in 20 minutes, where a parent said, I want the child back, and it went on for months. Because it became a symbol. And you get into symbols, and then you get into emotion, fear, guilt, or racism, and then you're off on the race. And there we go. So I don't understand. I know that Castro is a son of a bitch. I do know that. We all know that, but I know he's an old son of a bitch. And he's not going to last much longer. And the more people go down there and bring money and buy cigars and rum, that'll help. We can all do a little better with opening relations. I favored that with Ireland. And now you have Paisley and Adams sitting down. They never had even seen each other's faces, and now they're talking. So all I can say, ladies and gentlemen, nothing is solved in the world by 100 percenters who say, I ain't talking to that person. And show me 100% and I'll show you a person with gas, ulcers, heartburn, and B.O. And those people are called seethers. They're not seekers, they're seethers. And you want to stay away from seethers. God bless you all.
I think I'll get out of touch.